I'm Johnny B. Good, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Alec Baldwin, and you're listening to Here's the Thing from iHeartRadio. The statistics are staggering. Up to 1 million plant and animal species are expected to vanish by the year 2050. And we've experienced an almost 70% decline in wildlife since 1970 alone. My guest today, Andrea Crosta, is the founder of Earth League International, a nonprofit organization whose objective is to protect our oceans, forests, and wildlife through research and investigation. It's an intelligence agency like the CIA, but for Earth. The organization has helped crack down on wildlife trafficking, from a cartel moving sea cucumbers in Mexico to a jaguar fang ring in Bolivia. The dangerous work of infiltrating these organized crime units was recently profiled in the New Yorker article entitled Earth League International Hunts the Hunters. The path to Andrea Crosta's calling has been a long and winding road. Prior to his work as head of EIL, he held various positions in security and animal activism before starting the online shopping company Think Italy in his native country.
Think Italy was, we're talking about 97, 98, was the prehistory of shopping online in Italy. So it was the second e-commerce website ever in Italy with Microsoft, was the first case history of Microsoft in Italy for e-shopping. And I went all the way up. And then when the Nasdaq crashed in 2001, I went all the way down. And I sold it for debts, basically. Right. And, but it was like a...
like an Amazon type of kind, thing.
Yeah. Back in the day, I mean, 98, right. We are talking really about the...
the dawn.
And you would not believe how many people in 98 told me, e-commerce, I don't think it's a thing. No, it never worked.
You're an idiot.
Exactly. And so it's okay, whatever. But then when I then sold Think Italy, I was already into business and I did another master's degree in business administration. My first one was conservation, zoology, and natural science, because my love was always there. And then I started to work as a business consultant for those companies that was pre-Snowden, those companies that produce technologies for spying, basically.
Who taught you that?
I was just doing the business part. So I was just...
you weren't a spy.
No, I was selling stuff to spies. Right. But not me. Right. But I got in contact with a lot of them, of course.
But I see you go from animal rights activist to businessman to security consultant. And then it says he occasionally trained park rangers.
Correct.
And that's who trained you?
My job was to find people to train them. So I was always, you know...
You had to train them in terms of, but not with weaponry.
As well.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
anti-poach. Who trained you?
Nobody. My job was just, okay, let's find a great trainer.
Oh, you would help, right?
U.S. Special Forces.
You were the manager.
Yeah, exactly.
You were doing the training.
And I was going down in the middle of nowhere in Kenya, when Kenya Wildlife Service has a sort of a shooting range and like a training center. And we were there for 2 weeks, 3 weeks.
Wow.
Trying to help these rangers to... It was 2010. We were right in the middle of the elephant poaching crisis when we were losing 35, 40.
Where's the training center? What part of the country?
It's near Tsavo National Park.
Near Tsavo.
Yeah.
So when you're there, those rangers are under what flag? Meaning they work
Kenya Wildlife Service.
That's the National Wildlife Service to protect all of
Kenya's
wildlife.
Yeah, and they were very undertrained, very under-equipped.
You wouldn't think that, knowing the wealth of Kenya in terms of wildlife.
I know, but they didn't. Some of them didn't have shoes. I mean, really, really. And they were up to train poachers.
And they couldn't pay them. Not very much.
No, not very much.
They got food.
Yeah, exactly.
And shelter.
We thought, okay, that was the beginning.
Right.
And this is when, you know, the wheel started to, in my head, say, okay, wait a second. I went out many times with them. I witnessed those terrible, you know, scenes that you can imagine, you know, an entire family of elephants gunned down with AK-47. And I could see almost, you know, when you see in comics, like a question mark on the head of the rangers. And back then, the whole world, the international community, was asking them, the rangers, to solve the problem. And I thought, that's unfair. I mean, elephant poaching and ivory trafficking is like is under environmental crime. We're talking about the fourth largest criminal enterprise in the world, up more than $200 billion every year. And you're asking the rangers to solve the problem? It's like asking
the barefoot rangers.
Exactly. So it's like asking the LA County Sheriff to solve narco trafficking.
Right.
It's not their job.
Right.
So because of my past, and here we come to, the circle is, because of my past in working with intelligence agency, I ask, okay, but who is using professional intelligence, I'm talking about CIA kind of intelligence, to fight back? Because the problem is not the poachers, it's the traffickers, international traffickers, trafficking networks, organized crime. And the answer was nobody. And so I said, okay, I'm going to do it. I mean, I didn't know how difficult it would have been. But they said, okay, so I stopped what I was doing. Back then I was in Kenya. My job was a security consultant, again, hiring the right people for the former prime minister of Somalia, who had huge security problems with the terrorist group Al-Shabaab. You know, that was the time when Al-Shabaab controlled all Somalia and also part of Kenya. So this guy had... And I was there for this reason. And I said, okay, I think it's time to go back to my roots. And I was born with this huge love for animals and for wildlife and this huge desire to protect them. And I said, but how are we going to do it? Okay, I'm going to create the first intelligence agency for Earth, the first CIA for the planet. And I start looking for the right people, because it's not easy, of course. Mm-hmm. Former CIA, former FBI, crime analyst, undercover operators.
The
selling point was, I remember, to Mark Davis, is my right hand right now, 28 years with the FBI, one of the most successful undercover agents in the history of the FBI. We're actually doing a documentary about him. And I told him, listen, Mark, you were undercover with El Chapo, Escobar, Russian mafia, Italian mafia, pedophile, corrupt government official. I have the biggest, most important war you ever fought in your life. And it's the war for Earth. And it was sold.
He signed
instantaneously,
on.
Yeah.
And he's... Where is he based?
San Diego. And he's an incredible person, you can imagine, 28 years with FBI and the agency as well. And
what did you tell him that you wanted him to do? You wanted him to do what?
The task was to build a brand new organization with former CIA or FBI.
With what budget?
Well, now I have the budget, but back then I was really crazy. I mean, Mark, to his credit, he has been working for me for us for many years. We started to pay him this year. Okay, this is extraordinary people.
So they volunteered?
Volunteer, some of them, absolutely. Him, first of all. So. And so slowly we started to create this mini intelligence agency with the task, the objective is to investigate and collect intelligence at the highest possible level from this international trafficking networks. Mm-hmm. And when you go so high in the network, it's not environmental crime anymore. There is a lot of what is called crime convergence. So the convergence of environmental crimes with other serious crimes, mm-hmm. money laundering, human smuggling, human trafficking, mm-hmm. narco trafficking, same people, mm-hmm. same networks.
Right.
They can offer you...
Same infrastructure,
same people to bribe. And during a meeting, they can offer you 3 tons of shark fins, 300 jaguar fangs, 2 tons of ivory, but I also smuggled. Exactly. And that's what was, till now, that was the layer of the problem, completely misunderstood, actually unknown, also by law enforcement. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's precious what we do, because we have undercover teams who are in the field, get, you know, the kind of work we do is a sort of sophisticated social engineering work. In other words, we are really good in becoming your friend. Mm-hmm. And when we are friend, you are going to tell me everything I need to know over time.
Now, why do you think, I'm going to get to that in terms of your methodology, because I read that in the article. That was a great article, by the way. So how do you get them to talk? How do you get them to trust you?
Trust. That's the magic word. And so you have to take your time to establish trust with these people.
So give me an example of someone you're after. Why? And what do you do? What do you say to him or her?
So first of all, there is work done before through our contacts, because we operate like a small agency. So we recruit sources and informants on the ground. Doesn't matter where, Colombia, South Africa, Mexico, doesn't matter. And they tell us who are the big players. And then we send another team, and their team is to become their friends. So they introduce themselves as businessmen, as potential traffickers. We never do anything illegal. We never buy anything illegal. We're just really good in listening. We also use a lot of undercover devices to capture videos and conversations. So we produce a ton of intelligence. Mm-hmm. And over a period of time, their job is to become their friends. So they, these people, the targets, the trafficker, they have to see in our people a potential gain, a potential money down the road, okay? So we have to play. It's like acting for these people, pretty much. And until you get to a point where there is trust, there is friendship, so they invite you, hey, when are you coming back again to Colombia? When are you coming back again to Thailand? Because we have to, I have this, I have that. Are you interested?
They want to do business.
And
you lead them to believe you're there to do business.
Or even better, not me business, but I know somebody.
With a lot of money.
Yeah, and this allows us to stretch it even more, because the point is to spend with them as much time as possible, right? So if you say, I'm the buyer, okay, how many times you want to meet them without
buying? Where's my check?
Exactly. Right. So you say, no, my boss is in here, is in there.
Yeah.
And so with that, we sometimes stay with them 2-3 years. So
dangling.
And they invite us to family events, wedding, birthday, and we go there and we film and record everything. And everything is then passed to our crime analyst who receives like an incredible amount of information. And that's the second part, very interesting. So data processing, and they understand, figure out what we get. But this is how we work. And
I'm seeing a movie now.
Oh, yeah.
I'm seeing a movie now where, like The Godfather, you're at the airport and all the containers are filled with rhino horn, and the cops come to bust the guy that you've been soliciting for 2 years, and he's in shock because he thought you and he were best friends, and you just kiss him on the mouth and say, Francesco, I am so sorry. And he gets taken off. He goes to prison for 10 years. And you've been working on this case for a while.
Absolutely. And what happens, with the exception is that we usually disappear a little before the arrest or the action. And best case scenario is when the bad guys do not understand what went wrong.
Don't even think you're to blame.
Exactly. And we were
so
in
you could still operate in that sphere without somebody bad-mouthing.
Exactly. Otherwise, it would be over, right? So, of course, as you can imagine, our field operators, their identity is confidential, even within our organization. There are no pictures of them.
Right.
And, it's a very delicate job that they do, of course.
Are you concerned since the article came out, now that people know who you are?
No, about me, not really. I mean, that ship sailed already. I mean,
so you're not the face of a lot of these operations anymore.
No, I cannot be.
People who you've trained and who work for you, they're the operatives,
Absolutely.
You can't do it anymore.
No, my job is, when we have enough information, is to engage government agency and local enforcement, including in the U.S., and say, hey, we have this information, we have this intelligence. I think it's interesting. And the beauty of crime convergence, or the convergence with other serious crime, is that if you approach, like it happened in a U.S. law enforcement agency, a big one, and say, hey, I have a case about this guy and he's a big shark trafficker. They say, ah, thank you, but, you know, we have a lot of work. But if I say that the same guy is into international money laundering and human smuggling, human trafficking, all of a sudden you have their attention, and that's my whole point.
Right.
Okay, I'm going to bring you a good case.
It's like a poison pill. You have to embed it inside of another
prosecution. You can take the credit. You can arrest them. It's fine, as long as I can work behind the scene, as long as you put them away for a longer period of time, because sometimes if you arrest these people for environmental crime or wildlife trafficking, they get maybe a few weeks or a year of jail, but if you arrest them for money laundering, oh, that's different.
Is that typically the goal? Is that the reality? Meaning you have to accept this compromise, and gladly, because you're getting your work done, but you have to accept this compromise whereby you have to embed it inside these other things. They're never going to act just on the spirit of the animal protection and animal rights alone. They won't do that.
No, they will do it only with, they started to do it, you know, there are, for example, U.S. Homeland Security just launched like a new unit dedicated to
7.5 million, I saw.
Correct. So that's great news. So they will have money, and they have, certainly they have the mandate now to do it, and we also help them as well with information. So that's the end goal, is to have these big agencies, like gorillas, with money jumping into the fight.
Where around the world would you say do you enjoy the highest level of cooperation?
One for sure, the U.S.
It is.
Yes, absolutely. We have been sharing confidential information. We produce those reports that we call confidential intelligence briefs, and with many U.S. agency, and they're acting on the information. In the past couple of years, we help a public prosecutor in Mexico to arrest people. We help a public prosecutor in Bolivia to arrest people. They do it. The problem is that, unlike the U.S., in almost any other country, they don't have the capability to investigate these people. It's just too high, okay? And so when we give information to the U.S. authorities, they can redo what we did. Mm-hmm. And collect evidence, and actually do even more than that, of course, you can imagine, right? But when you share information with Bolivian, Colombian, Thai, or South African, you just have to direct them toward, okay, go to this place now, and you will find these and these and these, and you can arrest them, and they do it. Unfortunately, they don't have the capacity to do more.
So you're like dogs who sniff out the crime
and
sniff out the people. Then you have to turn it over to somebody else.
Exactly. Yeah.
Now, one would assume, only because of money, I don't want to speak ill of the policies or the people, for that matter, of places like Africa and India, but I would imagine because of budgets and money that those are some of the toughest places for you to deal with, which are rich in these resources and have no money to defend them, correct?
Sometimes also no interest. Sadly, environmental crime in many countries is not a priority. It's seen, okay, it's nature, it's animals, whatever, you know.
Right. So the human component is viewed as part of the cycle.
Absolutely. So the agents, not only under resources, but also underfunded, but also the people are not the right people.
They don't have the will.
No, and they, from the top, from policymakers, from the officials, big, you know, important officials or ministers, even the ministers, sometimes they don't have a clear mandate of what to do. On top of it, what we do in the field, we often uncover corruption at the highest level, okay?
And they What do you do then?
And they don't like it. Exactly. And they don't like it. Really,
what do you do? You go home?
No, we share with U.S. authorities.
Has the U.S. ever taken any actions on that information?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. They did. And actually, there was an important arrest in Southern California, San Diego, end of May this year. And that was, I cannot give you too many details, but it's basically our work for almost 2 years. And they took down three of the most important, in my opinion, wildlife traffickers that have been operating between Mexico and the U.S. and China, because a lot of stuff goes to China. And that's a great example of us doing the first part of the job, and they do what they're supposed to do, of course.
Earth League International's Andrea Crosta. If you enjoy conversations with activists fighting for animal rights, check out my episode with the co-founder of People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, Ingrid Newkirk.
There was a time when hunting was what many people had to do to survive.
Right.
And just as other animals hunt, some humans had to hunt. I think those times have also largely gone, and most people who hunt today are not just getting one caribou to put it on the table. It does happen.
Right.
I think being pragmatic is very good. You have to have your head in the sky and your feet on the ground. But we're looking at, you know, Donald Trump Jr. going out to put a head on his wall.
Yeah, that's a different story.
Right.
To hear more of my conversation with Ingrid Newkirk, go to hearsthething.org. After the break, Andrea Crosta shares how we are at a now or never moment for rescuing our ecosystem.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. And you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. LeBron James.
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Alec Baldwin, and you're listening to Here's the Thing. The illegal slaughter of wildlife for human consumption in food or medicine is well documented. Most of us are aware of shark fin soup or rhino horn virility pills. But there is a rare animal very much at risk that is not getting the same attention as the others. Earth League International's founder Andrea Crosta is fighting to save a porpoise called the vaquita in the Sea of Cortez. This little-known marine mammal is dying in the gill nets of fishermen as they pursue a fish called the totoaba.
So the whole story of the vaquita is one of the most bizarre stories ever, because it's the vaquita is the rarest marine mammal in the world, you know, and sadly now...
It's a baby whale.
It's sort of a baby whale.
It's a miniature whale.
Really, exactly. It's a miniature...
Between whale and dolphin.
Correct.
Okay.
And it's endemic of the Sea of Cortez, Baja California, so only there. And now probably less than 10 survive in the whole Sea of Cortez. Okay, they are at what, like, literally on the brink of extinction. And the reason is because they die as bycatch in those nets. But those nets are actually for a fish called totoaba. And the swim bladder of the totoaba is actually what we're looking for. So it's
for medicine.
For traditional Chinese medicine. So they put these
gillnets. Chinese want the totoaba from Mexico.
Swim bladder. Just the swim bladder.
But why are the Chinese allowed by any kind of territorial agreements? I mean, that water off the coast of Baja California must belong to some government entity in Mexico.
Of course. It's
why
under
are
their
they
protection.
Allowing the Chinese to take all the...
No, but there is nothing.
It's not being smuggled.
It's crime. It's 100% crime.
And I'm
it's
assuming,
illegal.
Based on the other things you said, that a lot of the people who are doing the smuggling are also drug dealers who are smuggling.
Because they make a lot of money.
Right.
You know,
and they have the pathways, the routes.
Absolutely. Imagine one swim bladder, which is a swim bladder, okay? We're talking about a swim bladder of a fish. Right. In Baja California, the fishing cooperatives and the fishers make $3,000 per swim bladder. Usually they make $600 a month fishing. So you can imagine the temptation. That's why sometimes my whole battle was, hey, stop pointing the finger to the poachers and the illegal fishermen. You don't know what you're talking about. You don't know what is to live there in the middle of nowhere with no state, no jobs, no nothing, no security. Of course they do it. The problem are the traffickers. Go after them, not after the poachers,
right.
Okay?
Right.
You make $600 a month fishing and one swim bladder is $3,000. Of course you do it. So the swim bladder, $3,000 a piece in the Sea of Cortez. And then this strange illegal supply chain begins through Mexico, through the U.S., all the way to China. And in China, the same swim bladder goes for $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, even $70,000.
US dollars.
Peace. And that's why the narcos and organized crime jump in, because it's a lot of money with almost zero risk, because you're not dealing with cocaine or stuff. You're right, we're dealing with swim bladders, and nobody cares, but it's a lot of money.
It's ironic to me, I mean, it's not lost on me, that it's duplicative in terms of this, the totoaba swim bladder issue in the Sea of Cortez, and the drugs themselves, meaning we've had a policy for 40-something years in this country of interdiction and only going after the producers and not going to the demand and trying to stop the demand.
Because
these poor people are going to produce it and try
of
to
course.
Make money any way that they can.
Of course.
And it mimics the same thing in the drug world as it does in
Absolutely. Today I read that in Colombia, for another year, they are cultivating more cocaine than last year. So it's growing because these are poor people who have nothing else to do. And yet they became the villain. And what I keep saying is the villain is not the poacher. The villain is not the campesino. The villain is the trafficker who lives in Park Avenue, by the way.
Right. Miami.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
Now, when I was younger, the portal for me into a lot of this stuff was my ex-wife, who was a big animal rights person and is a big animal rights person. And she introduced me to different people. We met, you know, in the early days, we met Alex Pacheco when he was still involved with PETA. And then he left, and Ingrid Newkirk, who co-founded with Alex. There's people who, this is such a cause for them. This is such a burning ache in them, how these animals are treated, that they open up their wallet and they give you a lot of money. They give you a lot of money. And I'm wondering, is that the same with you? Do you find people who really are?
No.
Well, we got to work on that.
I know.
I got to get you a couple phone numbers.
I know. One reason, because I really suck. If you put me in a room fundraising, I will leave the room and give money to somebody. So my team say, Andrea, come at the very end, okay? But the point is, it's easier to raise money when you deal with animals directly. I mean, you rescue elephants, rescue dogs, or you rescue baby elephants in Kenya. Then you have what they're buying, so to speak, when they give you the money, is this the emotion of rescuing a creature, a living creature, I mean, on the spot, probably, right? Because you can give them money, so I know that the elephant is safe. In our case, I'm in the business of keeping the animals alive in the wild. In terms of visual, for example, I produce a lot of undercover footage of bad, bad people trafficking parts. Okay, it's not that as sexy as, okay, look at this baby elephant, or look at this, please help me. If I always... make the joke that in Los Angeles, if I go around with the photo of a baby elephant, I raise millions of dollars in an evening. But if I go around like I do, I say, hey, actually, we need time to work on this network for 2 years, but they're responsible for the killing of thousands of elephants for the ivory, but any time. And maybe you will not see everything we do because it's dangerous, it's confidential. Mm-hmm. So I'm sorry, I will share with you. So that you see where I'm going. So the whole thing is way more complicated for us. Mm-hmm. From our website, you understand, but not so much. The only way to understand what we do is it's a meeting with me or Mark Davis, my right arm. Otherwise, you will miss most of the work that we do. So law enforcement and other professionals appreciate a lot what we do because they get it. But with the public, it's a whole different story.
Now, this also leads me to, you know, I'm in rooms with people in all over the country, in Washington, New York, L.A. When Tom Freston ran Paramount Pictures and his wife, his ex-wife, Kathy Freston, was a huge and is a huge animal rights supporter, this was how we got to have the PETA fundraiser on the lot at Paramount. But the idea is, for most people, beyond pets, beyond a dog or a cat, a domestic animal, their relationship with all other animals is as a meal on a plate.
I know.
How do you get people who have the money, perhaps, how do you get them to care? But what do they give a shit about rhino horn?
Exactly. Or
what
sharks.
What do you tell them? Right.
Or sharks.
What do you tell them?
Exactly. So my pitch now is that at the level we work, we are really talking about industrial scale criminal exploitation of nature. So it's destroying the planet.
Right.
It's destroying entire. We have a project now in the Amazon on deforestation, land grabbing, and then how they use this land for cattle and then meat. So they're destroying our planet. So even if you don't care about animals, it's important for our future to stop these criminal enterprises. And by the way, what they do also has an impact on climate change as well. Mm. When destroying the forest, when you're emptying the oceans, it will have repercussions also on climate change. Unfortunately, climate change, in my opinion, is a very self-centered narrative. It's mostly about us, human. We are afraid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Good point.
Very rarely you hear, what about biodiversity? I mean, we are destroying.
What's that word? Anthropocentric.
Totally anthropocentric. You know, we are afraid. But that's what
it's
it
only
is.
Us we care about.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So I tried, for example, we've been working on a network of trafficking network in operating between Peru, Ecuador. They're responsible alone for 500,000 sharks every year. Okay. Mm-hmm. So before understanding our impact, you have to understand the impact of these networks, how they're destroyed and how it's important to stop them. Otherwise, the next generation, we keep talking about, oh, hey, let's do our best to protect as much as we can so the next generation will find something. Well, I have news for you. If you continue like this, they will find nothing. There's nothing to protect. Even if they will come up with the best possible solution, there will be nothing to protect. So most of these species and ecosystem and wild spaces do not have the time for a generational change.
Mm-hmm.
It's now or never.
Animal activist Andrea Crosta. If you're enjoying this conversation, tell a friend and be sure to follow Here's the Thing on the iHeartRadio app, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. When we come back, Andrea Crosta shares his experiences meeting wildlife traffickers on the ground.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I'm preaching to somebody today who is waiting for God to give you your next step. and you don't know what it is yet. You need God to show you your next step. Because God, I can't stay where I am like I am where it is. This isn't going to work. I have to move on, but I don't know where. A lot of time you'll use it as an excuse. Well, I don't know how. I don't know where. I don't know what. God, if you show me. God, if you tell me. God, if, no. You know enough right now. And if you needed to know more, he would show you.
Hey, this is Stephen Furtick. I want to invite you to listen to my podcast, Elevation with Stephen Furtick. I am here to help you for the battles that you face in life, for the times when you feel discouraged, for the times that you need guidance from God. I want to give you the truth of what he says about you to help you rise to your full potential. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Alec Baldwin, and you're listening to Here's the Thing. In the early days of Earth League International, Andrea Crosta was given a crash course in some of the darkest parts of humanity. Those people willing to hurt vulnerable animals for profit. That knowledge came at a price, one which included his marriage at the time. Crosta has since rebounded and repartnered.
That was the early days when I had to go through educate myself. So I...
It took a toll on you.
Of course.
It was a cost for you. It was painful.
Was painful.
As it would be for anybody.
No, and I was also probably not prepared. But I had to do it because you had to see what you're fighting. And so progressively, it destroyed my soul. It destroyed the marriage, by the way. And
then it makes you sick?
It makes you sick. I moved to Los Angeles. I got a lymphoma in Los Angeles. So I had to, you know, and all this while trying to fundraise and work, right? And then after the lymphoma, it was COVID for 2 or 3 years. So it was just a mess. And I never gave up. I never said, okay, that's enough. Maybe, okay, the toll is too, a little bit. No, I never said that. With my small team, we continue to work throughout my lymphoma, throughout the COVID. But on a personal level, I was dead.
Broken.
Broken completely. I was just living with my dog, Argos, in my apartment. And
Argos.
And that's, yeah, my.
Of course your dog's name is Argos.
Argos, yeah, from the Ulysses. So Argos first. And Sophia later, literally, you know, when
where did you meet her?
Friends in Los Angeles, and she has a really, she's a nurse for working for children in ICU, so really, you can imagine.
Grounded.
And I needed somebody like this to, you know, to pull me up. I was ready to continue with my work, but trading off my personal life. You know, when you say, okay, I'm going to...
You sacrifice one for the other.
I'm going to continue. I'm going to bust the ass of these people. That's what I... The reason I'm on this earth is to protect the animals. And doesn't matter what happens to me.
Do you think things have changed in the time you've done this? Have things gotten better? Are people's attitudes toward... I mean, to me, the most profound thing, or among the many profound things you say, is their understanding of the entire ecosystem.
Correct.
And that wildlife conservation is a part of the ecosystem, especially like with fishing. You see, if you take all those fish out of the water, what's going to happen? Do you think things are improving?
Maybe locally, here and there. It's all about, you know, with everything, it's all about people. If the right people is doing the right thing in the right place, things will change. Globally, I don't think so. And I think that one of the reasons is because, again, environmental protection is still not a priority. The climate change movement is ultra-focused on fossil fuel and this and that, but that is not it.
Not comprehensive enough.
Exactly, not comprehensive enough. On the other hand, what is moving finally, especially in the U.S., is that the government agencies and big law enforcement agencies are finally getting what is happening. And they're willing to do something about it. But, of course, the U.S., I mean, what are you going to do in, you know, to change things in the Amazon, for example? You need the Brazilian government. You need the Colombian government to do something. And how do you do it? I honestly, I don't have the answer for that. I mean, I see myself as, running, the relay run in the Olympic. You know, when you run and you pass the baton to somebody else. That's my role. So I'm running as fast as I can, and I'm doing as much as I can, and then I will pass the baton to someone else. And the someone else, because the more I work now, and the more he or she will find alive, and then it's her job or his job to continue. I don't think I will see a change in my life.
I want you to describe two different people you may have met. I'm assuming you've met, and I want to start with: have you ever met a trafficker? Have you ever talked to a trafficker?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Would you describe the country?
Yeah.
Too much detail. Where were you? What were the circumstances? What did they tell you?
Oh, it's a long list. I have a long list. I mean, we can do 10 different movies from our stories. It's funny because we recently started to produce also, on top of our intelligence, we're also producing profiles, psychological profiles of the traffickers to help law enforcement and agencies to understand who are this guy. The big difference is that on top of environmental criminal networks and trafficking networks, unlike narco-trafficking, there are businessmen. So you have, first of all, they are businessmen. They do a lot of criminal stuff, but they are businessmen. They make a lot of money also from legal stuff. Actually, they are masters in overlapping legal and illegal. So they have import, export, supermarket, restaurants, all kind of businesses, real estate. And on top of it, they also do all kind of trafficking. And also, not only, I mean, we're not talking about, again, wildlife trafficking, illegal logging, illegal fishing, illegal mining is a big thing as well. Some of them are, I would say, funny people. I have a couple of them in mind, and every time my undercover team comes back home and we do the debrief and we discuss what they did, they always say, this guy is funny. They know how to live. They have no clue what they're doing. I mean, the destruction, or they don't care about it. They are usually very rich. They have ties with 100% criminal organizations, narco-trafficking, for example, and they are really, really good in doing certain things without doing too much. Mm-hmm. For example, a lot of the traffickers we have been investigating in the past few years, they launder the money for organized crime and narco-traffickers. They will never do drugs themselves, but they are really good in laundering the money. Mm-hmm. And organized crime and narco-trafficking organization have the need of they have to launder a lot of money, a lot of cash. They sit on cash in the U.S. as well, right? Mm-hmm. They don't know what to do with all this cash. They are really good in doing that. So they constantly mix.
They're called cousins.
Absolutely, yeah. And that's...
Same family.
Absolutely. And that's the opportunity, actually, because wildlife, environmental crime and wildlife trafficking and illegal logging, whatever, it has a lot of similarities with narco-trafficking, with one very important difference. At the top of a narco-trafficking organization, you have a big narcos, a big trafficker, and you have zero leverage on this person. You kill him or jail him. It's not you cannot do anything else. And if you kill him, somebody else will
come. You can't bargain with him.
No. On the top of who runs the show, environmental crime, world. The trafficking, right. They are businessmen. They make a lot of money also from legal businesses. So my job is to raise their cost of business, going after them in a way nobody ever went after them like that. Raise the cost of business, arrest a bunch of them, and eventually, hopefully, push them out of
the crime. They don't want to go to prison.
No, of course.
And the people in the narco trafficking, they assume they're going to pay off the cops. They're going to shoot their way out.
Exactly.
But eventually they realize they might go to prison.
Exactly.
They've all gone to prison.
And they know, right? Yeah. But not these people.
No,
I don't want to go to the prison, of course.
So my, they can't handle that.
No, so I'm trying to change the game in this way. Forget about the poachers. Forget about the little fish. Go after these people. Show them that they are not ghosts anymore. Because these people are ghosts. They have no names, no face. My job is to give a face and a name to ghosts. And to do that, I use my ghost. Okay, so it's a battle between ghosts. But the end game is at the end, this guy will have a name, will have a face. And usually we provide intelligence about these people. You have to understand, our reports are maybe, you will find 50 pages of intelligence about one single person. So imagine how much you can do. as a law enforcement agency about this person if you want to.
You know John Hume, the character in the movie Trophy?
In
the movie Trophy. What did you think about that argument where he says, we have to kill some of these animals.
Yeah.
And we have to let people come here and shoot some of these animals so I can monetize the product to save the animals. I don't have any budget. What do you think of that?
So I know stuff about him that I cannot share here, just to begin with.
I would imagine.
But it was on the news a few days ago. He managed finally to sell his property, the whole property.
Oh, the whole thing.
With all the rhinos included.
Right. And he has a huge vault of horn.
Exactly. So apparently, when I heard the news, because he's selling this, I don't know how many rhinos, I think 2,000, to an NGO, actually, to a big, one of the largest environmental organizations in the world.
Wow.
To African Parks.
Oh, wow.
So they take in it and it's a strange idea, but okay, right. I can see the point. And when someone asked me, in an interview, my reaction, the first thing I said was, is he allowed to keep the stockpile? Because he's sitting on hundreds of millions of dollars. Of horns.
Yeah. But there's a ban on horns still.
Absolutely. Apparently, I don't know if it's true, he will be forced to destroy it. But because, of course.
Burn it.
I mean, you cannot. I'm completely against the legal trade of ivory or rhino. It just fuels the demand.
Right.
And again, let's not forget we are dealing with Asia, so 2-3 billion people. So you don't want to fuel the demand of anything.
Right.
With 2-3 billion people.
Exactly.
Right. It's not Rhode Island, okay?
Right.
It's Asia, okay? So yeah, it's an interesting story. And Mr. Hume, for many years, kept saying, okay, we have to sell rhino, a few horns to sustain the expenses. And I was always against, absolutely.
Someone you worked with, and they don't have to be somebody who put their lives at risk, but I'm thinking along those lines. Someone you worked with who you really admired, someone you worked with who you thought, my God, this person, like yourself, they're really committed to this cause and they're willing to risk almost anything to follow through.
Well, one of my is our chief investigator, the head of our undercover team, is incredible. And he does things that, in my opinion, nobody else in the world can do.
And he's not outed in the press. He is still clandestine.
No, he's not American. And he's able to, with his team and also our guidance, because there is a lot of preparation before the mission. We try to improvise as little as possible. He's able to really become a good friend of the worst possible people that you can imagine on the planet. And then get the kind of information that not even the government can get from these people. And I'm really proud of my team. I always say most of the work is my team. The undercover guys, the analysts, the people in the field. So I coordinate the whole thing. I had the idea, but they have to be praised, not really me. I mean, I can tell you a little story just to tell you how sometimes the value of why it's important to become their friends of these people. We work for more than a year in a Latin American country on jaguar trafficking. So they traffic parts of jaguar, mostly fangs
and
bones as well.
In South America.
In Brazil, it's Pantanal, but they do it in Colombia, in Bolivia, in Peru, in Ecuador, Suriname, everywhere. And then they ship bones and fangs to Asia because with fangs, they like to have fangs, like jewelry and bones they actually do, like they do with tiger. They actually, jaguar bones in Asia is then sold as tiger, and they do bone wine, tiger bone wine to enhance your, sexuality and stuff like that. So, but they're destroying entire population of jaguars in Latin America. So we help a local public prosecutor in Latin America to arrest the 5 most important jaguar traffickers in the country. And we did it very successful. We also published something new. Then we went back to the same country six months later, last year, to see, what happened. So the good news is that everyone else stop buying jaguar, which is exactly my point. If you scare them, they will stop. Mm-hmm. Unlike narco traffickers, believe me. If it's all about the right pressure points. If you identify the right pressure point and then you apply pressure, they have fear. They stop.
Yeah.
The funny thing is that you're out of a movie, believe me, it's true. While we were meeting these traffickers, one of them received first an SMS and then a call from a policeman alerting them about us. Because they knew, but they didn't know exactly who we were. So this guy, and we were filming everything, by the way, in the same time. So filming undercover, of course. So this guy, the traffickers, was telling my guy about us, without knowing it was us.
Right. Do you think AI, I mean, AI has become a huge watchword in my business because we're all going to be replaced by AI.
Absolutely.
You think AI can help you in the work you do?
Eventually, probably, yeah. I mean, in terms of finding connection, when you have a lot of data and you have a lot of, for example, imagine you have a lot of names and address and telephone numbers and emails and WeChat accounts and all kind of names, all kind of aliases, all kind of stuff. I think yes. But the problem is that all this information, you should we should, you know, there should be a one repository, one database with all this information or find a way to, in this, but I want to say, you know, because I have, every time people coming up with all kind of technologies and try to help us, and what I answer is yes, but first of all, you need human intelligence that only people can do. You have to go there, get dirty, go in the middle
and
of nowhere, meet these people, understand these people, okay? Mm-hmm. Intelligence comes from the Latin intelligere. It doesn't mean to know. It means to understand. Mm-hmm. And if you don't understand, you will never have the right tools to fight back.
Now, in my travels around the world, many places in the world, no one knows how to relax and enjoy life and get the most out of life like the Italians. And you are an Italian man.
100%. And also American recently. Yeah.
Okay. So you're an Italian-American, but you are Italian by birth. And I'm wondering, do you ever get to unplug and live like Italians do and enjoy yourself? Or are you always plugged in?
I'm a bad example.
You're a bad Italian.
I mean, Argos and Sophia, again, are helping me a lot to unplug. And it's so, so important because if you break, everything breaks down with you, right?
Yeah. You put a lot of pressure on yourself.
But on the other hand, I think Italians have in their DNA, we know how to enjoy ourselves.
So what do you do when you want to unplug?
I usually hike on the Santa Monica Mountains with Argos and Sophia or on the beach. That's it. I love, I mean, I'm a big, big lover of the Pacific Northwest and Rocky Mountains. So whenever it's possible, I go there and just disappear for a while.
Well, I want to wish you the best of luck. I mean,
thank you
I read
so
this article and I'm so admiring of what you do because you really are fighting what I think is one of the great battles to bring to people the understanding that these environmental crimes all are of one.
Thank you.
Andrea Crosta. This episode was recorded at CDM Studios in New York City. We're produced by Kathleen Russo, Zach McNeese, and Maureen Hoban. Our engineer is Frank Imperial. Our social media manager is Danielle Gingrich. I'm Alec Baldwin. Here's the Thing is brought to you by iHeart Radio.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.